Oakley and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul will deliver her third State of the State address Tuesday, laying out her vision for the year ahead. Join Radio Catskill for live special coverage from the New York Public News Network starting at 1, hosted by Dave Lombardo with analysis from Ian Pickus and Chantel Smith before and after the address. It's the 2025 State of the State address Tuesday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
This is Cruiser R. Grace, KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskills Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. The Fat Lady Cafe was for 18 years one of Conneunga Lake's best known places for good food, good laughs, good vibes, and it's now a Greek restaurant. There's a lot of history leading to this moment, and my guest on Catskill Character today, Judith Maidenbaum, is the person to tell the story. For those of you who don't know the woman behind the Fat Lady Cafe, you're in for quite a few surprises, so let's get to it. Judith Maidenbaum, welcome to Catskill Character.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Let's begin at the beginning. You were born in Coney Island, New York, home to our first enclosed amusement park, Sea Lion Park, built in 1895, and, as everybody knows, Nathan's Hot Dogs. Please tell us about Coney Island back then.
Well, that was in the 40s, and Coney Island was really a sort of like the Catskills, a place of character and many characters. So Coney Island was great. I lived in West 5th Street in a two-family home. My grandparents lived downstairs, and we lived upstairs, four children. And my grandfather was an Orthodox rabbi and had a synagogue on West 3rd Street, two blocks away. We kind of lived between the synagogue and the house. Isn't quite me today, but that's where I started.
Of course, this was the 50s when you were growing up, a different world. And you lived in, as you just pointed out, a religious household, a religious community. What did that provide for you?
You know, many people leave that community and hate it. I've always had tremendous feelings for it. Positive feelings, because we celebrated beautiful traditions that were interesting and colorful, and I've kept them alive in my house. I kept them alive in the cafe. The rabbi used to come in and say we had more people at our Rosh Hashanah dinner than he had in the synagogue. So it provided me with a background in Jewish thought, Jewish culture, and Jewish color. I think if you look at religious communities today, we have many of them here in the Catskills, they're growing children who feel secure and safe, and that's what I felt. A religious life gives children a good background, you know, something to build on for the rest of their lives. I think it's true of Catholicism, or all the religions.
Because of your father's work, when you were 10, you moved to Toledo, Ohio. And again at 14 to Providence, Rhode Island. I was wondering what kind of impact that had on you.
Well, first of all, living in Toledo was, I don't even know how to describe going from Coney Island, which was for me a little shtetl, tiny little Jewish community, to going to Toledo, going to a public school. Remember, I went to yeshiva in Brooklyn, and an Orthodox yeshiva, Beis Yaakov, really. The girls cover their arms and you pray every day. It's a very, very Orthodox. But Toledo was my introduction to a whole world outside. People who had dogs. It was a whole introduction to different interests. And I think I was the only Jewish girl in my school. And I suddenly realized, first of all, I went to a museum and the teacher explained when we saw a picture of Moses that Moses had horns and all Jewish men had horns. And I went home and I asked my dad if...
Where's your horns?
If he had horns. Went wild that I could be so stupid. But I was introduced to not only what we thought of others, but what others thought of us. And that got me thinking about a lot of stuff, especially nowadays when there's a tremendous amount of anti-Semitism. It taught me that there were other people. It takes you out of your religious narcissism to realize there are many ways of looking at the world.
Well, you ended up back in New York City and attended Yeshiva University, but you got kicked out for nonconformity. Some would wear that as a badge of honor.
I didn't actually get kicked out. They took away my full scholarship. For me, losing my scholarship meant I was being kicked out. I was gonna leave, and I left, and I went to NYU Uptown, which no longer exists, but I had to figure out how to pay for it. It was a big deal because I wasn't religious anymore. I got into trouble with the powers that be, and I had to leave.
We move through life sometimes without thinking, sort of mechanical, on autopilot, just doing what's expected. Can you relate to this? And I'm thinking you did this for a certain amount of time, and there was a change. So what can you tell me about that?
I don't know if the change came when I lost my scholarship, but I was a good girl for many, many years. I mean, right after I lost my scholarship, went to my own, picked my own college and left where my parents felt if I was going to college I should be, I got married and I was still a pretty good girl. But I think at some point in my marriage, when I decided after several years to leave it, I started thinking, I woke up to start thinking that there were other ways of living one's life than the way my parents did. And that took a long time. It took a lot of struggle, real struggle.
Yeah, and you eventually became a psychoanalyst. You did something that most psychoanalysts don't do. You treated schizophrenic patients. And let me just say, schizophrenia, for those people listening, is a brain disorder. People have delusions, hallucinations, extremely disordered thinking and behavior, but it is not the same as multiple personality disorder. People tend to get those things confused. Tell us how you came to work with this population and what your approach to working with them was.
I won't say that I chose it. What happened, I went into Jungian analysis rather early in life, in my 20s, and I became a Jungian. I won't go into the big differences between Jung and Freud and Adler, but in those days, being a Jungian for me, really meant something very different from the way most people become analysts. The Jungians were very heavy into dreams, very heavy into literature and into myths. And eventually, somehow, through my work in Israel, where I lived, and in Switzerland, and then in New York City, where I worked at the Jung Institute, I was sent schizophrenic patients by the head of the clinic. Why he sent me those patients was, believe it or not, because I had written my doctoral dissertation on parapsychology. And in his disordered way of thinking, he assumed that since I knew so much about parapsychology and trances and ghosts, I must know something about schizophrenia. So he sent me my first patient in that institute, a young schizophrenic boy who I met in the basement of the Institute 8 o'clock at night when the Institute was more or less closed and we were all alone. And turns out I have this schizophrenic, violent kid, and I really didn't know what to do or how to treat him. And eventually I started getting help from a group run by Hyman Spotnitz in Manhattan. He's a very famous psychoanalyst who treated schizophrenia. And he had his own crazy, wacky way of doing it. And I went to train in that group with those, they call themselves modern Freudians. Mm-hmm. So I was part of that whole modern Freudian group that treated schizophrenia. Then I started really treating them.
You know, we were talking earlier, Judith, and I was telling you that when I was an intern, my first patient was a 16-year-old schizophrenic boy who had just been released from the hospital. I was in school, in graduate school, for 2 months. I knew nothing. And I said to my supervisor, why are you giving me this patient? I don't know what to do with him. And he told me at that point that they have found that people who don't have all that theory going around in their heads and, you know, thinking about all that stuff, relate to schizophrenics as human beings. And they have better success with them. And I'm thinking, did part of that, you said, wacky kind of approach to schizophrenic patients, did it really maintain that human connection in a way that maybe other people who were more advanced than I was didn't have any longer?
Well, I think a lot of things. But one of the things that Spotnitz was is he was very funny. And he relaxed people that way. Mm. And he also had all kinds of techniques. The Jungians never developed in those days. I don't know how they are now because I eventually left the Jung Institute and the Jungians, even though I was analyzed by Jung's direct successor. So I have what's called Jungian Yichus, but I left it and I
tell
really,
the listener what that means.
Yichus is you have important parents. So you have Yichus, you come from, mm-hmm. you know, you're getting married and your father's a doctor. That's Yichus. If your father's a machinist, like my father was, built machines. That's not Yichus in
not
the
so
Jewish
much.
World. That's not Yichus. But Yichus in the Jungian world was analyzing with C.A. Meyer, which I did. And so I had Jungian Yichus, but I left anyway because I didn't think that whole training or that whole, you know, that interest in myth and in dreams was not giving me what I needed to really treat people in the real world. And I started looking for other people who would, didn't matter to me where they were from, but I took classes with a large variety of people in the city who I thought had something to teach me, and that's what I did. And I think I became effective with schizophrenics. I don't know, maybe I'm effective with schizophrenics because I'm closer in some ways to the unconscious because I was born in Coney Island, because that was a wacky place. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you were also born to parents who had trauma. I mean, your father was in the war and he had what we now know would be PTSD. Your mother, although she came here before the Holocaust, her whole family was wiped out.
That's true. I mean, my grandmother would light 50 candles in a Jewish holiday on the table in commemoration of her entire family that was wiped out. So coming from that kind of background, maybe, you never know why somebody becomes who they are or what they, or they do what they do. Sometimes it's just happenstance. In my case, this guy Wagon Seller sent me down into the cellar of the Jung Institute, schizophrenic patients, because he figured if I wrote about ghosts and I wrote about a ghost who appeared to Nathaniel Hawthorne, who was a writer in early American literature, I thought that's why he sent them to me. He figured I would know something about schizophrenia if I knew about ghosts. Ridiculous.
So
ridiculous. But now I do know a little something about schizophrenia. Not that much, but I know enough to know that it has nothing to do with ghosts.
Right. nothing to do with it. It's a brain disorder. So we're clearing that up for the listener. And I just want to tell the listener one more thing before we take a break. Every child in your family became a therapist, right?
I have a brother who's a Jungian analyst in Philadelphia. Another brother, he's a Jungian analyst in Boston. And I have a sister who was a nurse who rehabbed drug addicts. I don't know what that says.
Yeah, well, something to think about.
It says it's a family business. It says that the restaurant business was not a family business, but that was a family business.
Yeah.
We all did it.
We're going to take a quick break here, Judith. You've been listening to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. My guest today is Judith Maidenbaum. We'll be right back.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, Congressman Ro Khanna on tech moguls taking over politics.
These people, some of them think they're Nietzsche's Superman, right? And the little people like Ro Khanna in Congress are stopping them. This is an ideology that rejects the role of the state.
Ro Khanna on the Trump-Musk relationship next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour. Listen Sunday at 6 for the New Yorker Radio Hour on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week, we've got Davina Allen, founder of one of the great culinary schools of the world and a beloved ambassador of Irish cooking. At Ballymaloe, she's trained some of the most lauded chefs and cooks across two generations, and she's got a lifetime of stories. We spend the hour with her coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. And with me today is Judith Maidenbaum, former owner of the Fat Lady Cafe in Conianga Lake, New York. In the first half of the show, we talked about Coney Island, where Judith was born and lived till she was 10. We touched on the Orthodox Jewish religion and its complexities. She told us about becoming a psychoanalyst and parapsychological phenomenon, which she did her doctoral dissertation on. Now we're going to visit the history of the Fat Lady Cafe. So let's get cracking.
Okay.
Before we start, Judith, would you just for a moment talk about Pedro?
Pedro.
comic relief.
So I had a parrot. I had a parrot for many, many, many years. And Pedro used to actually come up with me to the Catskills on my shoulder and my cat on the other shoulder. They got along very well. But yeah, Pedro, what can I tell you about Pedro? Pedro would, he had a lisp. He would sing, "I left my heart in San Francisco."
Aww.
And everybody was charmed by him. He was a very charming parrot. But my neighbor in Manhattan claimed that he gave her a nervous breakdown. So I took him to my office in Manhattan. And there, he used to, if a patient cried, Pedro would cry if a patient
so
laughed.
So he was your assistant.
Yeah, but I had to throw him out of there. So I found a friend who was home all day and took Pedro. She still has him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she still has him.
How
Pedro,
old is he?
I don't know. I had him for over 10 years.
He's getting up there like
he's
us.
He's like me. He's probably older than I am.
Well, you've been coming up here since the 80s. Please tell the listener how it came about that you ended up becoming a restaurant owner.
Oh, God. So I came up here because there was a friend of mine in Manhattan who owns a restaurant or a bar up in Conianga Lake. And it was called the Boat Club, a famous bar. I think it also had some women, some working women upstairs. Mm-hmm. It was a famous old institution on the lake. And I came up here with my kids and an old boyfriend who was a jazz musician. And we all decided it would be the best thing in the world if I would buy this old crumbling building and build a jazz club. Which I did, but the building got condemned and I had to rip it down and I built a house and I moved into it. And while I was up here, I realized nothing much was going on in town and maybe I should go back to my original plans. and build a jazz club or a coffee shop or something, mainly to attract my kids to come up to a town where not much was going on for them. So I built a what I thought was a little jazz club or coffee house, and it turned into the Fat Lady Cafe.
Wow.
Then that's how it started.
And you tell me you knew nothing about running and owning a restaurant. You just learned as you went.
But I knew about crazy people, and there were plenty of crazy people that came in. And I knew about sane people, too. But I knew nothing about running a cafe. Mm. I had to learn, and that took some time, especially up here. You know, running a restaurant in the Catskills means that you have to figure out what to do about winters when there are no people around.
Right.
And that's a big problem. Big problem for the restaurant that took my place when I got too old to run it.
Yeah.
But I ran it for close to 20 years, loved it. People loved it. And people started writing me that they didn't miss the food as much as they missed a gathering place.
Yes. You know, Surgeon Generals always have a thing that's their thing, smoking, drinking, whatever. They're going to help America to recover from these things. Well, in May of 2023, the Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, released an advisory that called attention to studies on loneliness and isolation. And according to experts, loneliness and isolation increases the risk for individuals to develop mental health challenges. And those lacking connection can increase the risk for premature death. The levels are comparable to smoking daily. The Fat Lady Cafe not only provided a place to eat, but a community where people could go, people could connect. People, if they were lonely, they knew they had someone to talk to. It's very, very important to have that.
It's really a good point, because we had all kinds of things going on in the cafe. We had classes, and we had Friday night, we didn't have a happy hour. We had an unhappy hour where there was usually a psychologist behind the bar serving. I never really learned how to make drinks right, but I stood there and had other people come behind the bar and make their own drinks. But we had an unhappy hour where people were there to talk about what wasn't going right in their lives or with their kids. Stuff like that. And that leads me into my latest project. My latest project, because I don't think I can continue to... That's why I sold the cafe. I didn't think I could continue to stand on my feet and bake for hours and hours and hours. But I do feel that Kanyanga Lake needs a community center. And I've tried to get a few people together to help me get that community center built in Kanyanga Lake. And I'm hoping to have an indoor pool that turns into an outdoor pool in the summer, because I believe that is sorely needed here, not just by people like myself who have to travel to Pennsylvania to find a good pool to swim in, but young people who really need a place to learn how to swim and to continue swimming. And everybody, I think, needs a community center. I went to Tarrytown to look at their community center in the middle of the day. There must be close to 1,000 people playing cards, swimming, using the gym. People need a place like that here to gather, to learn new things, to meet one another, maybe a coffee shop we'd put in there with something like a gathering cafe, a cafe to gather in. I don't know, but we're just drawing up the plans now, and that's my latest interest and my latest reason for waking up in the morning and getting onto the internet. I've been asking AI for all sorts of information. It's amazing what they know about building a community center that I had no idea they knew. AI is a great resource. I asked this guy named Claude on ChatGPT, and he tells me everything. So I'm really working on this, and I hope if anybody is interested in helping, they'll contact me, and I'll get you working on it too.
That is so fantastic. But as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, oh, I hope this community center is going to be open to people outside of Kaneanga Lake. I mean, can you get a pass, a day pass, you think? Or I guess these are the things that you'll be thinking of down the line.
I don't make the rules, but I will guess that because there is no community center anywhere in – well, actually – Calicoon has something, and Calicoon has an outdoor pool.
Yeah,
I've actually taught cooking in that community's little community place. But I think it's needed in the entire area, the entire area. And I'm figuring now it's how to fund it, how to find local businesses maybe to help out. But there are all kinds of grants that are available for this type of thing, and we're just researching it now. But of course, other people, we could not build a community center that was not open to everyone. I mean, I go up to Tarrytown every now and then and go swimming with a friend of mine that lives there, and it's opened if I want to go in. I don't think that we would even think of closing it to just Kaneanga Lake.
So it's for the community of man.
It's for the community of Sullivan County, at least. I wouldn't say everyone, but for sure, it's needed. I think it's, you know, when I was in Israel this year, I found that every little town had something like that. Went to a place my daughter lives in a small town. It's called the Country Club in English. You have to say the Country Club, but they have it everywhere. And for some reason, one of the reasons we don't have it here is we have a outdoor life. They don't have it in cities. But I think it's needed here now. I think it's about time that we had something like that.
It'll really address the isolation and loneliness that we were talking about.
Also where kids meet. I mean, I have a grandson in Monticello High School. When he meets up with his friends, sometimes they meet in the parking lot. They'll all get to the parking lot in the middle of Monticello, and that's no place to meet for young people. They really need a place to, they can meet in the gym, in a gym that we're going to build.
Great. Judith, thank you so much for coming in today. You said, what do you want to interview me for? I don't have anything to say. I think you have a lot to say. You have a fabulous, rich life, rich history, and you're still out there doing it. So thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
You run a good show.
I actually enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
Fun on a rainy day.
Yes, yes. You've been listening to Catskill Character with today's guest, Judith Maidenbaum. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs in the 10:30 time slot. Be sure to tune in then for more stories with fascinating characters of the Catskills and beyond, right here on Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, there is a lot of misconduct among academic researchers, even fraud. Can it be stopped?
Identifying the problem is not the same thing as changing our practices.
And how does scientific fraud become big business?
Publishers earn more from publishing more. It's a volume play.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Tim Buckley was one of the great American songwriters. Next time on The Wagalo the Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll hear covers of Tim Buckley songs from British and Irish singers and bands. So join me, please, for British and Irish focused covers of songs by the great Tim Buckley. Next Sunday afternoon at 3, immediately after Folk Plus. Just like birds and
flowers. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.